Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. He joins us on Thursdays at this hour, and we appreciate that. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. Trying to stay dry, just like everybody else.
Absolutely. It's certainly going to be a wet beginning to the hurricane season, it looks like. But let's jump into this. We've had a individual who was released. This one has some interesting circumstances that it seems to me that it might have been parts of the process were working too slow and didn't catch up to the other parts of the process. But what happened here?
Okay, so, you know, you're referring to the inmate that was released last week, and the public was alerted that that inmate had been mistakenly released. And that triggered, you know, media reactions and people reaching out to the Metropolitan Crime Commission, asking us, you know, our opinions about all this. And, you know, the way that you started this is you identified this as a release, as opposed to an escape. So this story struck a nerve in this community because of the mass escape that occurred last May, a year ago. So last May,
right,
you had an escape event that was unprecedented in Louisiana history. And there were 10 inmates that escaped in May, and they were not released. They escaped from the jail. The difference is that with a release, this incident that occurred last week that the public was made aware of on Tuesday was due to a clerical error, a paperwork mistake made by deputies in there, as opposed to the inmate or inmates conspiring to escape from custody of the jail. That's what occurred last May, an escape. It wasn't a paperwork mistake. It was the inmates initiating a mass escape from the Orleans Justice Center. So in the context of, you know, a paperwork snafu, unfortunately, you know, this is something that is not unique to the Orleans jail. It's not unique to the state of Louisiana. This happens everywhere in the country from time to time, where human error results in paperwork snafus that result in the inappropriate release of wanted subjects or inmates from custody. So, you know, there's human error involved in everything in our society, from the private sector to the public sector to law enforcement. So that's what occurred in this particular instance, human error, as opposed to an inmate-initiated escape. So in the context, there were a lot of questions posed to me about, well, if the inmate was released last Friday, why did we have to wait until this Tuesday to find out that this inmate had been released? So what I spoke to the sheriff. I've been doing this for a while, and you know my assessment of this is that the paperwork mistake that was made, the mistake occurred on a Thursday. The sheriff's office found out on Friday. So when they found out about it, the first protocol was to reach out to the victims and witnesses in this case to make sure that their security was provided for. And at the same time, the sheriff's office notified their law enforcement partners, meaning the district attorney's office, the police department, Louisiana State Police, that this inmate had been released. And in the meantime, the sheriff's office took every step internally to attempt to locate this individual. They checked with his family. They were quietly, before they posted his picture publicly, not because they're trying to cover it up, because they didn't want to panic him and make it more difficult to apprehend him. So they waited, and after all of their attempts to reach out to his family failed, and they checked all of his known addresses, and they could not locate him. Did they release the information to the public, including his photograph? And that triggered him coming in and surrendering himself. But, you know, the sheriff's office has to, you know, check certain boxes. I pointed out that the first priority is protecting and notifying any witnesses or victims for the offenses in which that, you know, that inmate was in custody for. That box was checked. The second is immediately notifying law enforcement of the mistaken release. That box was checked. And then the third step is to conduct an internal investigation to determine what resulted in the paperwork mistakes that led to that inmate being mistakenly released. So there's a number of factors there that I'd like to kind of go over a little bit. So we know that, you know, the mass escape that occurred last May was, I think, the ultimate final straw that broke the proverbial camel's back with respect to the former sheriff, Sheriff Hudson. So she was coming up for re-election last October, and she was voted out of office by the public in the general primary last October. The candidate that won, Michelle Woodfork, had to wait until May the 4th to assume office. So the sheriff that was voted out of office last October, and the reason that the public voted her out was that 3 years into her administration, there had been nothing but a series of scandals, missteps, and mismanagement. And finally, the public had had enough of it. So when it came time to decide if she was going to get a second term, they rejected her and voted Michelle Woodfork to take over that office. But she had to wait until May the 4th to be sworn in. So one of the other complicating factors that I believe probably contribute to this is that the city is in the process of implementing a new computer system, tying together all of the components of the criminal justice system, including the sheriff's system, the sheriff's computer system. The new system went active in April of this year. So the employees of the sheriff's office have been undergoing training in this new system since about mid-April of this year. They're still learning how to do all of this thing. And, you know, keep in mind that, you know, the inmate escape that occurred last May and all of the other missteps under the prior administration, those are all symptoms of a department that has been mismanaged, you know, for the 4 years of Sheriff Hudson's administration. So Michelle Woodfork is sworn in on May the 4th, and she is now responsible for running the sheriff's office and changing the culture of the sheriff's office, which means that, you know, when this inmate was mistakenly released a week ago, she had been in office less than 3 weeks, and you don't change the culture, you know, of an organization like the sheriff's office in a 3 week span. So, you know, I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to put this in context of, you know, this is very, very different than the escape that occurred last May. This is a clerical error that resulted in that, rather than an inmate-initiated plot or plan or conspiracy to escape custody. And, you know, it ended happily because the inmate ultimately surrendered himself yesterday, and the sheriff's office held a press conference yesterday addressing, you know, what are some of the remedial issues or corrective actions that are going to be implemented to try and reduce the potential for this occurring in the future. So the system in place, what ended up happening in this particular case, this inmate was previously booked with another offense. And then while he was free on bond for that offense, he got arrested again for some new charges. So his first arrest, he failed to appear in court. There was a hold placed on him. So when he got rearrested, he posted bail, but there wasn't the proper notifications or notations in the electronic digitized file, and the sheriff's office did not hold him, posted bail, and on the second offense, and was released when he should not have been released on that. When the bondsman caught that, he brought his client back into the jail and surrendered him, but the paperwork never got updated in the system that resulted in his mistaken release. So, again, you're dealing with a paperwork, a training issue, compounded by the fact that there's a new system, computerized system that's in place, that has been in place for less than a month, and everyone is attempting to familiarize themselves with it. So all of these were factors in how this mistake was made. So the sheriff started off for a press conference yesterday by saying, you know, that this is unacceptable. This is a failure on the part of the sheriff's office, and the buck stops with her, the sheriff. And she then began to talk about what needed to be done and what she was in the process of doing to mitigate against this from happening going forward. So she went through a number of different things. That is, I think, what the reason that the public elected her to this office, because they wanted change. They wanted someone that accepted responsibility for managing what I believe is the most challenging jail in the state of Louisiana. And the reason that I say that is that we look at that inmate population and drill down not just on the numbers of inmates, but what those inmates are in pretrial custody for. At any given time, there are going to be north of 1,300 inmates in pretrial custody. 60% of that 1,300 number are going to be in there for crimes of violence or felony weapons offenses. Any given day, there's going to be north of 200 inmates waiting to be tried on homicide charges in pretrial custody. So the property and drug offenders that are in pretrial custody are in pretrial custody because of their extensive prior criminal histories. And so that is a concentration of some of the most dangerous and violent offenders in the state of Louisiana. These are pretrial inmates that are waiting for their due process rights in the local criminal justice system. And the person that's responsible for managing that jail is the Orleans Parish Sheriff. That jail is a challenge if it is operated effectively. And the reason that Sheriff Hudson was voted out of office, the public came to the conclusion that that jail wasn't being effectively managed. So they decided to change the leader. That leader has been in there less than 3 weeks when this paperwork mistake occurred. She's acknowledged that the buck stops with her. They're working to identify it, and the way that they handled this case, based on what I've been able to find out, based on what I've been told, is that they've handled this appropriately. They're being transparent, and they're accepting responsibility and acknowledging that what occurred is unacceptable and it will be corrected going forward. So I just think it was important to kind of put this in context in light of the fact that the public is still sensitive to the fact that this is another inmate that was, you know, released from custody, and they're comparing it with the event that occurred last May, which is very, very different than what occurred last week.
So as I was looking through the summary that you provided, what caught my attention was he was actually released pursuant to a court order. But what no one realized is that the bonding company had actually rescinded his bond the day before he was released.
Well, the reason that they rescinded
the judge, I understand, because he didn't show up in court and,
exactly.
and all of his previous conduct, right? But the judge, when the judge issued the release order, he was under the assumption that the bond was still in place. And that's why the bondsman actually the next day calls and says, why did y'all release the guy? Because the bondsman realized that if the bond wasn't in place, he wasn't subject to be released.
So where did the sheriff realize that a mistake was made?
So that was the notification that was made. You know, this doesn't happen like this in this order very often, you know, of all the years that I was. So this was kind of an anomaly situation where it seemed to me that the paperwork didn't catch up to the defendant, you know, and that he was ultimately released on Thursday, but the bond had been rescinded on Wednesday. And right. I know they'll figure out where that paperwork was and where it landed in the interim and whether it was, you know, just waiting to be input into the system. Because whenever you're fooling with these bonds, you know, there's almost a standalone process sitting on side of the booking process as it relates to these bonds, because they can be rescinded for a whole host of reasons. But he was actually ordered released by the judge. It was just the fact that he didn't have a bond in place any longer is kind of what I got from it.
You're absolutely right. You know, so again, so the system, the computer system should have all of this information, and we're transitioning from the old computer system to this new Beacon system, and it's less than a month old. So there are going to be some glitches that aren't necessarily the result of a poor system being in place. I suspect it's because of the unfamiliarity of the employees that are dealing with this system that this mistake was made. So I would like to think that we're not going to see this happen in the future, and the sheriff has addressed the things that she wants prioritized with this new system that will, you know, reduce the potential from this occurring in the future.
Right. Absolutely. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We haven't had a Troop NOLA update in a while, and it sounds really nice that we have one today. Where do we stand?
Well, I had the commander of Troop NOLA come make a presentation at the Metropolitan Crime Commission's monthly board meeting, and I was a big fan of what they're doing. I walked out of that meeting even more impressed when I saw that presentation. So, you know, just reminding everybody, Troop NOLA was created by Governor Landry in January of 24 when it was announced at a press conference at the Superdome that he was going to create a permanent troop here. So that was when the announcement was made in January of 24. And they just didn't move troopers, you know, from their regular assignments into the city of New Orleans. They had to train those troopers as to how to perform the type of policing that they're going to be doing in the city of New Orleans, because it's very different than the strategies that are used on the highways with normal troopers. So they had to implement a training program for troopers that will be, you know, policing and assisting the New Orleans Police Department. And so it was probably close to mid-year of 24 before the first troopers started to trickle in, and it started with about a dozen. As we speak today, there's probably about 25 to 28 people, including supervisors assigned to Troop NOLA. The goal is to grow Troop NOLA to a 40-man unit, including supervisors. But here we are, you know, a couple of years later, and what this troop has accomplished is nothing short of remarkable, in my opinion. So as they are coming in here, they're not trying to duplicate what the police department is doing. Police department responds to 911 calls. They are the first responders. So when someone dials 911, it's going to be an NOPD unit that responds to that. The state police are not attempting to usurp the responsibilities of the police department. They're here to complement and augment, you know, the capabilities of the police department. So everyone knows that the NOPD is understaffed, and response times suffer as a result of it. The NOPD is prioritizing their responses for crimes of violence, and there are so few officers that most of an officer's shift is consumed by responding to felony violent calls for service. So what the state police are doing is they're not trying to duplicate or replicate what the NOPD is doing. They're trying to complement. And by that, what I mean is that the troopers are engaging in proactive policing. They don't have to wait for a 911 call. They're not responding to 911 calls. They can be unleashed to saturate an area looking for felony offenders. And the way that they do it is that they have to have legal justification to stop somebody. What they're doing is they're utilizing their training to identify drug transactions and traffic violations. So a traffic violation, you know, most people will say, well, why are we wasting troopers doing traffic enforcement? So if someone violates a traffic law and they are a felon that may be wanted for a felony offense, or they're in a vehicle that hasn't been reported stolen yet but is a stolen car, the troopers, if they observe a traffic violation, can pull them over and begin to conduct an investigation. Those traffic stops result in felony arrests. And if they weren't doing traffic enforcement, it means that those felony offenders would be continuing to prey upon the people of the city of New Orleans. So traffic is a justification to pull someone over. If they determine that there was a violation, it means that it gives them the legal authority to pull over that traffic violator. That doesn't mean that they're obligated to give them a ticket. If they determine that that offender doesn't have any felony warrants and it's a relatively minor traffic violation, they're going to let them off with a warning. But those traffic stops routinely result in troopers identifying people that are wanted for felony offenses. The police just haven't found them yet. That traffic stop justified the officer pulling them over, getting their identification, and determining that there is a warrant in the system to arrest them. When they pull that vehicle over for a traffic violation and they determine that there are drugs or guns in the car and that the individual has a prior felony conviction for certain enumerated offense, that can trigger the arrest for that as a convicted felon in possession of a firearm. So those offenders that are being apprehended because of the training of the Louisiana State Police to look for drug violators and traffic violators, that is reducing the crime rate for the entire city of New Orleans, because many of those individuals that are apprehended by the state police are involved in other categories of crime the longer that they're on the streets. On top of that, the Louisiana State Police are allowed to engage in pursuits if individuals fail to yield and stop their vehicles when they're instructed to do so. The state police theory is that if they're trying to stop someone for a traffic violation and they flee, there's probably an indication that the offender realizes that they have more serious issues than just a traffic violation. So the state police have the training and the discretion to decide if they're going to engage in a pursuit. And many of those pursuits result in the apprehension of violent and repeat felony offenders, the removal of drugs and weapons, and you know, that is contributing to the across-the-board decline in property and violent crime in the city, because many of those offenders that are arrested by the state police are engaged in violent crime and property crime. The longer that they go unapprehended, the more our crime is impacted. So the fact that the state police have been here really since mid-2024, and we've seen crime go down dramatically, is because in large part of the partnership that exists, the coordinated efforts that exist between the Louisiana State Police and the NOPD. Troopers are not doing traffic enforcement all over town, and they're not doing traffic enforcement without the knowledge of the NOPD. When they're going into an area, they're going to coordinate that with the NOPD, and they're going to go into it because there are problems in that part of town with that. And they are strategically deploying their resources to maximize the public safety benefits for the people of the city of New Orleans, and they're doing it successfully. So just since 2024, the state police have made over 1,200 arrests, removed 200 firearms from the streets, recovered 115 stolen cars, recovered over $180,000 in cash, recovered 40 stolen all-terrain vehicles that in many instances were used to take over streets in the city of New Orleans and do stunt things on the streets, take over the streets. Since they're here, they're doing that type of enforcement. 22% of all of the open felony cases in criminal district court are arrests that were made by the Louisiana State Police. So they are a force multiplier that is contributing to the declines that we've seen in murders and non-fatal shootings and all of the major categories of crime since their arrival here. And on top of that, because they are here, we're seeing that the National Guard has been deployed here. And again, the National Guard, we need to go to a break.
In a second, go ahead and finish up.
Yeah. Okay, so
go ahead. You can finish up.
Yeah. If we need to go to a break, tell me, and we can do that, and I can finish.
All right. Well, let's go to the break, and we'll pick up the National Guard right there. We're visiting with Rafael Goianeschi, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goianeschi, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. You were just about to talk about the National Guard participation as well, Rafi.
Right. So, you know, the governor created this permanent troop, and the goal is to have the troop at about 40 troopers, but they're not there right now, you know, and you know, it's going to take a while to build it up because there's a shortage of troopers throughout the state. So one of the things that the governor has done in support of the Troop NOLA, the troopers that are here, is he's agreed to deploy the Louisiana National Guard. Now, the National Guard has been a longstanding partner, to law enforcement in the New Orleans area, but this is the longest commitment that I've seen from the state of Louisiana to troopers, to guardsmen's presence here, and I think it's because of their close working relationship with the Louisiana State Police and the New Orleans Police Department. So when the guardsmen are deployed here, they're not making arrests. They're not responding to 911 calls. They're here to support and serve as a force multiplier for the New Orleans Police Department and the Louisiana State Police. So those guardsmen are going to be a visual deterrent, and they're primarily deployed in the French Quarter area. So they're wearing uniforms, and they are, as I said, not making arrest. They are there as a visual deterrent, and the way that they're used is to man some of the barricade areas in the French Quarter, some of the street closures and whatnot, to make sure that those are properly secured. And they're there to be a visual deterrent to support the initiatives of the police department and the Louisiana State Police. So those guardsmen that are here, they're going to be here, at least right now, the plan is through sometime in October of this year. They've been here since last fall, off and on. And what they do is more than that. Some of these guardsmen are actually sheriff deputies in law enforcement when they are not on active duty for the guardsmen. They're going to be post-certified trained law enforcement officials. So the state police has identified the guardsmen that are deployed here that are post-certified and have law enforcement training. So the guards, when the state police are on patrol, they patrol in two-man units. The NOPD patrols in one-man unit. So the protocols for the state police is each unit has two troopers. When the guard is deployed here and they have post-certified law enforcement background guardsmen here, they will supplant one of the troopers, so allowing the available troopers to be supported by a guardsman. And during the presentation that was presented at the Crime Commission meeting earlier this month, saw video of the state police engaging in pursuits of wanted subject. And their driving skills are nothing short of remarkable in that they're able to safely apprehend individuals, and the people that are pursuing them are marked state police units, but one of the members of that unit is a guardsman. Those guardsmen are backing up and supporting the law enforcement initiatives, and those pursuits safely apprehend known wanted subjects and violent offenders, and that is another benefit of having the National Guard here, and they're here to support the NOPD and the Louisiana State Police, and they're not being paid for by the city of New Orleans. They're being paid for by the by the state, and I think there's some federal funds that are being used to pay for them. So this, when we talk a look and take a look at the crime rate that we're seeing, you know, we're seeing the fact that murders are down 45% and non-fatal shootings are down 55% in 2025 compared to the four-year average before Troop NOLA arrived here. That is not a coincidence. That is a direct result of their presence here. Another thing that my staff uncovered is that because of the shortage of police officers, you know, and the priority of responding to calls for service, the police department, before the state police arrived, neglected drug enforcement because they were responding to violent calls for service. And what we saw was, we saw the statistics that were released by the New Orleans Coroner's Office. And we began, and I had my staff check to see, you know, was there any correlation where the coroner's office was reporting the number of drug overdose deaths and drug enforcement? And what my staff uncovered was that as the state police arrived and they engaged in more proactive stops for drug enforcement, the number of distribution arrests correlated with a substantial reduction in drug overdose deaths. So there's a direct relationship between arresting drug dealers and a reduction in drug overdose deaths in the city of New Orleans, and that is achieved in large part because of the efforts of the Louisiana State Police being here. So there's no question that our community is safer and has benefited by the fact that the state police have become now a consistent partner and a major contributor to the improvements in public safety that we're seeing. And now there's discussions about maybe creating additional troops like New Orleans and other high crime areas around the state of Louisiana. The training that the state police are receiving has been recognized, and some of the federal law enforcement partners are requesting permission to train some of the federal agents in the same manner, using the same academy staff that the state police are going through. Additionally, it's in the works that the state police here will be federalized, meaning that they will be able to make federal arrests will allow those troopers to go into federal court and testify with some of the arrests that are made in the city of New Orleans. So this is a success, and I just wanted to give credit to the amazing accomplishments of the Louisiana State Police during their brief deployment here. But the future looks bright for the city, in large part because of their efforts to contribute to making this community safer for everybody.
Absolutely. The additional manpower, the coordination with others, and it's been well received by the NOPD has made all the difference in the world for certain. Thank you so much for the update. We truly appreciate it. And thank you so much for what you do each and every day. We appreciate that as well. And have a great weekend.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty, folks. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back and check in with Scoot to see what he has coming your way when we return. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. Oh, I'm sorry. We covered a lot of material today, and Scoot's headed your way. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, coming up, we're going to talk about this operation going on in Kenner, and it's pretty amazing that the Kenner police are doing a great job finding people who are going online looking for people who are underage to have sex with. And there are a lot of things that I just don't understand in life, and that's one of them. We'll talk a little bit about that. Also, where does New Orleans rank on the list of cities that are the most sinful cities in America? Well, I'll tell you this, we're not number one, but maybe we can work toward being number one. on the list of the most sinful cities. So we'll talk a little
and
bit about
what
that.
What will your
another trans woman,
be?
Biological male athlete, has beaten girls in track and field competition in West Virginia. We'll talk about that. And two teens fell while subway surfing on a train in New York. Yeah, you get on top of the train, and it's like you're surfing on top of the train. Well, the two idiots fell. One is dead, and one is in critical condition. What's the most dangerous thing you've ever done? I mean, I can think of some stupid, dangerous things I've done, so we'll talk a little bit about that.
And I can't wait to hear what your contributions will be to be the number one sin city in the country. Stay tuned, folks, for that and more with Scoot.